Take it, Lou.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pi Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with regenerative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy? Can you feel it?
Oh, heck, it's burning into my brain. I'm so glad to be here tonight. I mean, where else would you want to be on a Wednesday night? But it's, I don't know where it is everywhere, but it's cold here, and I'm tucked away tight in my little studio.
Well, it's cold here, too, and quite frankly, I would rather be in a nice warm bed sleeping. But anyway, duty calls, and there is no duty than going on the radio and preaching the message of individual liberty to those that have not yet heard it.
Well, that'll be there when you get there.
Yeah. Or to those that have heard it but have not yet accepted individual liberty into their heart yet. So the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOD no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOD.org. So what's new and exciting in your world, Randy England Emeritus?
Well, first of all, I have not been contacted by the government in the last week. As a matter of fact, I really don't get contacted by them very much at all these days because I'm retired since summer. Although I had the highly annoying contact, you know, a few weeks ago when they sent me my tax bill for the year. So that is one of the more annoying contacts. But if I pay it, they will not throw me in jail, I understand. So,
well, that's awful nice of them.
Yeah, there are ways around that, usually by doing what they say.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like if you comply, you won't get hurt?
Well, hopefully not.
That's very kind of our servants and protectors, you know, to give us orders, and if we obey them, they won't hurt us.
You know, if I were king, that's all that I would want.
Think of that. So anyway, so much interesting stuff has been going on, and probably this one. This story here has been the most WTF moment that, as far as responses that I've seen from people. And this comes to us from Fox 29 in Philadelphia. The push to remove bulletproof barriers inside Philly convenience stores just got another hurdle. The Public Health and Human Services Committee has passed a bill which enables the city's licenses and inspections department to regulate the bullet-resistant barricade that stands between customers and cash registers in many neighborhood corner stores.
You know, what does regulate mean? What does regulate mean?
Well, that's a very good question. The reasonable or rational person who believes that government does have legitimate right to make rules regarding things would say, in the interest of safety, we're going to make sure that this bulletproof or bullet-resistant glass actually is bulletproof or actually is bullet-resistant, right?
So that there would be good bulletproof windows. But that's not what this is about, is it?
The highest quality, and no, it isn't. The bill moving through the city council reads, no establishment shall erect or maintain a physical barrier. It's called the Stop and Go Bill and is being offered by City Councilwoman Cindy Bass. Right now, the plexiglass has to come down, she said. She says she wants to put some controls on these small stores that, from her point of view, sell booze. Very little food, and are a source of trouble for her district by providing the customers what they want.
She wants to shut them down then, right? Is that it?
Probably.
I am live. Hey, we lost Lou there for just a little bit, and we've still got some nice music. I don't know if anyone can hear that but me. But Lou was talking about this the city council in Philadelphia, where Cindy Bass, the councilwoman, wants to take down the plexiglass bulletproof barriers in convenience stores. And she wrote, she's quoted, "We want to make sure that there isn't some sort of indignity in her opinion. There's an indignity, I guess, against the customers." Oh, I think we may still be having a little technical problems, but at any rate, if I'm still on the air, she wanted to make sure that there wasn't this indignity to serving food through a plexiglass only window in certain neighborhoods, and the owner didn't like it. He said that he resented the charge that the stores like his attract, I think, loiterers, and argued that calls to the police are frequently met with a slow response. And the most important thing, you know, he said, is the public safety. And apparently they're in a fight, but it's right now it looks like they're going to come down. And there's a council vote. The final vote is December 14th. So I guess he'll have to decide whether he's going to operate with or without one of those issues. Now, there was there's a Supreme Court case that it was argued a week ago, and I have an article, "Big Brother Looms as U.S. Top Court Tackles Cell Phone Dispute." And this case, it is the case of Carpenter versus the United States, and it's a case where there was a robbery. There were actually four armed robberies, and they caught one guy in the armed robbery, and they got his cell phone and found out that he'd been in contact with about 16 other numbers around the times of the robbery. And they wanted to find out of how many of these people, these 16 different numbers, were involved in the robberies. So without a warrant, they filled out some kind of an application, but it wasn't actually a warrant. Didn't have to be supported by probable cause. They didn't have probable cause just because this guy had numbers on his phone. But they followed a U.S. statute from back in the 80s, so it didn't really contemplate cell phones use, and they were able to get an order from a judge, but not a warrant, to force the phone company to give over the locations where each of these people were. And they found that the defendant, Mr. Carpenter, had been in the vicinity of these robberies at the time of the robbery, basically. And that, of course, caused them to charge him as an accomplice in the robberies. And like I said, they just had the Supreme Court arguments about 1 week ago today, actually. And so they're going to decide whether the police have the right to just simply go and apply for your cell phone locations. It comes the way the towers are. If it triangulates, or it tells if you're so far away from a given tower, and they can track you. They can track your whole life if they want, if they use this, and if they're allowed to do it. And I don't know, people may remember from a few years ago, back in there was a case, Riley versus California, and that case was one where the digital contents of a cell phone, that they would seize from somebody after an arrest, whether they had the right to just go in and go through the phone, take anything out of it, and that. And the court held, this was in 2014, that they couldn't do that. They had to have a warrant. And then there was another case a couple years before that, which was the United States versus Jones, 2012. And this is one where the police had been putting these trackers, a GPS tracker on your car, your bumper or fender, whatever, and they can track you everywhere you go. It's, in a sense, it's similar to this case because they can track your whereabouts. And in that case, the court, once again, they did the right thing. They said, no, you've got to have a warrant to put a GPS tracker on your vehicle. And so with the background of the Jones case, you got to have a warrant for the GPS tracker, and the Riley versus California, where you the contents of a cell phone are have to have a warrant to get into them. You have this case with Carpenter. And it's there's a mix of issues here. You have cases where the they have the right to seize, like they have the right to seize anything that you have on you at the time of your arrest. But of course, this isn't on you at the time of the arrest. This is on you. This is at the phone company now. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiend, and we're back from the market, and even more important, Lou is back. Hey, Lou, I think you're back, right?
I'm back. I'm back. I'm front. I'm everything.
That pregnant pause there. Well, Lou, while
I took you ground again,
as we went into the break, and you were coming back to us. We were talking about, I was talking about Carpenter versus the United States, which is the case where the Supreme Court now is going to decide whether the police can demand the cell phone records from your cell phone provider to tell exactly where you were and when you were at different times without a warrant. And it's a case that it'll be decided. It should come down. The answer is in June. And that's something that's just happening right now, just in this last week. And I'm hoping that it'll kind of follow the pattern of recent cases with cell phones, where the courts, they're pretty much recognizing that when the First Amendment says it protects your person's papers and effects, that sort of
the
thing.
The First Amendment? Isn't that the Fifth?
No. Fourth? No. Yes, exactly. Thank you. I'm mixing that. That's the First Amendment is in this other case that I have, but I'm not talking about yet. But anyway, you're right. Thank you. I need you to correct me. I think I've been shoving these amendment numbers out of my head since I retired, and I need to dredge them up from time to time. Yeah, but it seems to me that the court, they're receptive, and I listened to the oral arguments on it. The court is very receptive, probably because they all have cell phones too, right? And they're very receptive to the idea that your whole life can be on that cell phone.
That one would hope that they're receptive.
Yeah, well, it hits them where they live, just like it hits anybody else. So I think that's honestly one of the reasons why they seem to be going in the right direction on a number of these cell phone cases, these technology cases, because it hits them too. You know, it reminds me of back several years ago, you know, three or four, when Congress was debating how much of an exemption there would be, a tax exemption for estate taxes if somebody dies and they leave so many, how many dollars they can leave to their heirs without it getting hit with the estate tax. And it was down at, I don't know where it was, $3 million or something. And they kicked it up. It's like $5.4 million. And, you know, when I saw that number, I'm thinking, yeah, I said, well, that's probably some statistical average about, you know, what the poorest congressman is leaving to his kids or something. That's how they arrived at $5.4 million or whatever it was. So maybe I'm a little cynical. But anyway, that's coming.
But there's always a living trust, and there's always ways to get around that.
Well, the living trust really won't get you around it. You still have to pay the tax if it's over the amount, but it protects it to some extent. Well, it protects it for a time. But in the end, they're going to get their money if it's over.
No, they're going to get your money. Get it right.
Yeah, right. So, like I said, I'm just totally cynical, and sometimes that's not very productive to be cynical. Sometimes if you want to, you know, analyze something, you need to take off the cynicism glasses and just look at it.
Well, actually,
it's more fun to be
when dealing with government, one should always be extremely cynical. So, what is the root of this story? How did the discussion over cell phone privacy come about? Because the title of this article is "Big Brother Looms as U.S. Top Court Tackles Cell Phone Dispute."
Well, Big Brother, of course, is the Congress who passed the bill that authorized this procedure that doesn't require a warrant and doesn't require probable cause. They don't have to have a good reason to think you're guilty of anything to come after you on this. And Congress passed this back in the 80s. So, you know, one of the arguments that the defense points out is that the Congress, the cell phone was just in a gleam in somebody's eye. Nobody had cell phones in the 80s. Well, I mean, there were some car phones, but, you know, and literally.
You had the brick phone, too. But
for the most part, nobody had or thought about cell phones. Supreme Court judges probably didn't have them.
Yeah, for the most part, the people that had cell phones were the ones that would ask the car next to them if they had any Grey Poupon mustard.
Yes. Yes,
so, they would. So what exactly is the government doing with the cell phones? And answer that when we come back from this trip. What exactly is the government doing with the cell phones that another part of government is going to tell them, would you knock that off? We'll be back.
Yeah. And maybe they will tell them that. Maybe they won't.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Randy, and we're talking about a Supreme Court case. This is currently going on, Randy? Or is this
it's recent? It has finished oral arguments a week ago in the U.S. Supreme Court. Decision should come down in June.
All right. So, and for a daily payment of $19.84, you can get a Big Brother security state. So tell us more about the story, Randy, and this discussion over cell phone tracking and whether the government has to follow its own rules about obtaining warrants before searching.
Well, the problem is that you've got the rules are at variance. You have the Fourth Amendment, you know, which forbids unreasonable searches and seizures, and presumes that there should be a warrant for any search, and then there are lots of exceptions to that. And this case kind of got into the mess in that Congress passed this law back in the 80s that allowed them to get certain records from businesses. And these records, which turn out to be extremely personal and locate people wherever they are, whenever they are, wherever their phone is, because your phone how many times a second does it ping off the local tower, you know, nearest to you. So they it turns out that the records that they have now are enough to hang you for a robbery. And so there you've got a disconnect between the between this statute, which is kind of old, and has, I guess you might say that the statute has gotten more encroaching on the Fourth Amendment as the data that the companies collect. Now, it's one thing if a company knows your phone number and address. It's another thing if it knows your phone number and your location at any given moment for the last year, or for your life, for that matter. And they do. They know.
Let me just clarify then. So are you saying that, that when Congress wrote these statutes back in the 1980s, they were not showing a whole lot of regard for the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, the supreme law of the land?
They were showing a lot more regard for it back in the 80s when the records that they referred to didn't have all this personal information in it. You know, they still can go in and get, without a warrant, they can get your bank records and your credit card records. Because that's pretty personal.
Because one of the things, and I hate to get all fondling father worshiping, but one of the major complaints was that the redcoats were writing their own warrants on the spot, which essentially means that they weren't even getting a warrant. It was just a formality, because they weren't following the I guess procedural hurdle of going to their coworker and getting written permission to go through all your stuff, and that was kind of a pretty big deal back in that time. And most of these people that are probably supporting this because of my securities and everything else, these are the types of people that also revere the founding fathers for fighting back against this tyranny. So I have a real problem with this cognitive dissonance that's going on there.
Well, you know, on the one side, you have the cops, the law enforcement, and they don't care. They do not care about those things. Not at all. I mean, those are simply impediments. They're hurdles for them to get over or under. And they're,
so what you're saying
tried.
So what you're saying is the law is an impediment to law enforcement.
Well, it's designed to be. That's the purpose, however tenuous, of a written constitution. To restrain the government, who wants to do what they want, when they want, and however much the U.S. Constitution has failed, which is a lot.
No, it hasn't failed. The Constitution was never a threat to this government. It was a creation.
No,
it was a blueprint.
It has.
No, it was the blueprint for this government. It created this government. What are the constitutional restrictions on what can be taxed and how much they can be taxed? What are the constitutional restrictions?
There are none.
On, right. And what are the constitutional restrictions on how large the national debt can be?
Well, I said there were restrictions. I didn't say on everything. You know, I think I was mentioning before the break that one branch of the government has come in and said you cannot attach a GPS tracker to somebody's car without a warrant. And another has said that you can't grab a person's cell phone when they're arrested and just search through it without a warrant.
Mm-hmm. But here's another question.
They do fight sometimes.
Yeah, a little sibling rivalry, but ultimately you're asking the government to
justice theater. You got to have some.
Yeah, yeah. So are these people in government? Are the police following these rulings to say no? You can't just put a GPS tracker on a vehicle. Are they actually obeying this?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because criminals
if they want to use it in a criminal prosecution, they will have to.
Okay. Can they use that information to gather other information and call it inevitable discovery or something like that? You know, to avoid
cause it inevitable discovery. It'd be something more along the lines of a different source. Yeah. You can have an illegal source for information and a legal source, and as long as you take it from the legal source, it doesn't matter that you did something illegal on the other side. This used to come up in some cases I used to see where the cops would go barging into somebody's house when they had no right to go in and maybe saw something that they shouldn't have seen. And
they go, they would go in under the guise of, oh, I heard a baby crying. But they know darn good and well that there's no baby inside there. They just
they would, if they have some, they'll stick to a justification like that. I'm talking about utter stupidity, where they just walk through the door, just storm in, you know, like they're Hitler's boys or something, and don't give a thought, don't care about justifying it. It's only after they get in there and then a supervisor or a prosecutor shows up and says, what the hell are you doing in there? You know, do you realize anything you find is going to be suppressed because you have no right to search this house? Not yet. And if you can, you can. And they may have seen some things and known some things, but if you back them out of there and say, okay, what did we know before you went through that door? Did we have enough information to get a warrant? And if you had enough information to get a warrant, you write up the warrant application, the affidavits, you take it to a judge, get a judge to sign it, you come back over and say, now you're going to start over again. And they get to go in and they can find all the stuff that they found earlier, but you had a legal way to get to it. And but so you can, you know, if you get it something in a legal way, it doesn't matter if you did something crooked to begin with or stupid, depends on how you want to look at it.
So they get a do-over.
Yeah, there's some do-overs that you can do. Now, you can't do it in a case like this because this case is over. It's not like the cops could go back now and get a search warrant to check, get those records. It's too late for that. Probably. I haven't thought about that real hard. But if you catch the problem early enough, sometimes you can go out the door and come back in again.
Yeah, the reporting down the Detroit area, particularly Oakland County, or specifically Oakland County, I don't know if this is still the case. I don't imagine that it's changed. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. But the Oakland County Sheriff's Department was using a device called Stingray. And my understanding of Stingray was that it was military-grade spy equipment. So it would simulate a cell phone tower and collect information off of that. I don't know all the details on it because it's not one of those things that you could just, like, go to their website and find out exactly what it does. And the sheriff was called to testify before one of the committees of the state government and basically kept refusing or blowing them off. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but bottom line is I don't think that he ever went to testify. Or last time I was checked in on the story, he had not gone to testify. And there was one of the local politicians was always complaining on his Facebook page of, this sheriff won't come up here. And my solution was, well, why don't you just send some people to grab him up, and if he resists, beat him or possibly shoot him and treat him with the same amount of violence that you guys would do for somebody that was smoking weed. But they didn't take my suggestion.
You know, I wonder if there could be a crime of impersonating a cell phone tower. I'm thinking it would be some kind of a forgery. I don't know. I have to think about that a little bit.
Well,
I'm not sure what the courts are ruling on that thing.
I'm sure the politicians would probably come out with a law that allows law enforcement to impersonate a cell phone tower.
They're allowed to impersonate a plumber or something like that, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's been ruled several times that they're allowed to use deception, which means lie, during interrogation. So why not just take it a step further?
Yeah, there are a number of lies that law enforcement are allowed to use. You're not allowed to lie to them, particularly the feds. You'll go to prison. Just ask Mark Stewart. But they are allowed to lie to you. So it's a one-way street.
Well, same with politicians. Could you imagine if the Federal Trade Commission and different consumer watchdog agencies prosecuted campaign lies? Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that would be a problem. But the difference is that...
No, it wouldn't. It would be great.
The government is the forces of light, and we are the forces of evil out here. And so obviously, that's why it doesn't need to run in both directions. So anyway, this is, you know, I think and hope that it'll go this way. You know, it was interesting when I listened to the oral arguments in the case, the judges, more of them were harsher and tougher questions on the representative for the for the prosecution, for the on the government, than they were on the defense. And you can't really tell from that, but they really hit him with some very hard questions and kind of brought it out in a way that kind of made me feel that maybe it was leaning toward the good guys, meaning us.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
Once again, I'm cynical. I'm not very optimistic that the cops are going to follow this stuff, and I think that they're going to find back doors around it. And I think they're probably going to start looking for other opportunities to bring this in through the back door and have other court cases that support it while appearing to look like they're following any ruling that says, no, you can't do that. So I think they're going to take more bites at the apple.
They're going to try.
They're going to tear that apple up. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigiest place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, Meow Bit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. You can tell by that sound that Randy is here. And this is Lou. I'm joining Randy today. I am his sidekick or something of that effect.
That's because you haven't been on for the whole show. You left me for 10 minutes earlier.
Yes, I did. So one other case to talk about, and this is really interesting. I saw a little quote earlier today because I don't differentiate too much between conservatives and liberals. I think that when one looks in the other, the reflection that they, or when one looks in the mirror, the reflection that they see is the other group. And this is about oral arguments started, was it today? On the whole
yesterday.
Bake the bleeping cake. So liberals.
In the Supreme Court, yes.
Yeah. So liberals say, you better bake that cake or else. Conservatives say you better not hire illegals to bake that cake or else. So what's going on with the cake and who's allowed to bake it and who's going to be forced to bake it and why is everybody worried about everybody else's cake?
Well, the illegals manage to keep their head down because they don't seem to be in the case. But this is the, I think they refer to it as the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. And it's one, it's actually not a religious liberty case, but there's a baker, his name's Jack Phillips, and he makes, decorates cakes, and while he's willing to sell anybody a cake, he's not willing to decorate a cake with anything on it that anybody wants. And one thing he wouldn't put on the cake in this thing was that it was a gay couple who wanted him to put whatever the gay theme, maybe it was two grooms, I don't know, whatever it was on the cake, and he wouldn't do that. He also won't he's a real patriot apparently, because he refuses to do any cakes with any anti-American stuff on it or anything that's offensive, you know, X-rated messages, stuff like that. He's picky about what he will put on a cake if you want him to decorate the cake. But he'll say a cake, you know, whatever. But anyway, he ran into, headlong, I guess, into the Colorado discrimination statute, which includes under the protected categories, I believe. I haven't read the statute, but I think that a sexual orientation is one of the protected categories. And, you know, and since he is a Christian who has a religious objection in this particular case, it could have been a religious liberty case, which is I don't want to get my amendments wrong again, but I have First Amendment still. And it could have been that, but there have been decisions that have come down from the Supreme Court, you know, over last several decades, really, basically forcing citizens to violate sincerely held religious beliefs.
I'm going to throw a curveball at you here, Randy.
Go ahead.
Yes, it is the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution that talks about freedom of religion, but is Chapter 5, Article 68 right in the North Korean Constitution that would protect his religious freedom if he was over there? Go ahead.
You're continue. Just too cynical to talk to. You had way back when you had the Mormons who wanted to have polygamous marriages, and they said, well, we know that's a sincerely held belief, but it's offensive to us, so you can't do it. And there have been some other things. What was it, the Indians who wanted to use peyote in their religious ceremonies, and they said, no, you can't do it. And there's also been a couple cases where the Supreme Court rejected a right to engage in racial discrimination based on religious beliefs, which is kind of a lot like this case, in the sense that you're discriminating against a... Go ahead.
As far as protected classes go, where do business owners fall in this anti-discrimination statute in
they're not
Colorado?
A protected class.
So in other words, what they're saying is... somebody who goes into the bakery has the right to force this baker to perform labor for them, whether he wants to or not.
Well, that's what they're trying to decide.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, if somebody calls an Islamic bakery, or a bakery run by Muslims, however you want to put it, because bakeries aren't necessarily Islamic, and they ask for a cake with a cartoon of Muhammad on it, will they expect the Muslim baker to bake it also?
I'd have to read the Colorado statute.
Yeah. I'm not really a baker, and I'm definitely not religious, and if asked to bake a cake, I'd make the most fabulous gay wedding cake, but there's absolutely no right to compel somebody to labor.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high above Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiend is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Hello, Lou. Are you back with me?
I'm back. I am back. Yeah.
And after the break, you sound fresh. Did you dab a little water in your eyes and keep yourself awake?
You said. Oh, I did some meth, so I'm ready to go.
There we go. All right. All right. And what's your address there? Make it simple.
I live in Jefferson City, Missouri. But anyway, so.
Okay. Well, back I hope to. I hope my cell phone isn't pinging right now.
Back to the cake. And
the cake. Bake the cake.
Can you have your cake and eat it too? That's the question.
Well, the problem is that the two fellas that wanted the cake couldn't have it, at least from this particular baker. And just before we went out, you were giving a good argument why the court should come down in favor of the baker and he shouldn't be forced. But there was kind of a write-up in the New Republic that kind of was a short review of why they should be have to bake the cake. And there was a writer named Sarah Jones who wrote, "Why should the law obligate a calligrapher or a photographer or a baker to take a specific order? But on closer review, the ADF, I assume that's the organization that's defending Mr. Phillips, the ADF's argument breaks down. Wedding vendors don't run ministries. They run businesses that are open to the public. And while business owners do have some legal flexibility over who they do or do not serve, this isn't a matter of no shoes, no shirt, no service. The action Jack Phillips wants is to take is morally equivalent to rejecting a customer because they're blind or female or black. It doesn't mean very much if Phillips allows a queer person to buy a birthday cake. The queer person has to hide any public evidence of his queerness in order to receive service." And I think that's probably wrong because this guy, he'd sell to anybody. He just wasn't going to decorate the cake. So they didn't have to hide there. It was due to their message, not who they were. I guess they could be standing there holding hands and he'd sell them a cake. But I'll go on. What Phillips wants is for the law to weigh his personal beliefs about a person's intrinsic identity above that person's right to access a business. So that's kind of the other side's view of it. And I think I said earlier that there have been a number of cases in the Supreme Court that basically said, we don't care about your religious beliefs. You have to obey the law. And so they did not really come so much at this from a religious perspective, but another First Amendment perspective, and that is the right of freedom of speech or free expression. And there's kind of a negative side to freedom of expression, and that's the right not to have to say something that you disagree with. That's kind of the same kind of right as being allowed to say what you want to say. You can't be forced to say what you don't. And there's arguments with that because, after all, if you write something on a cake, it's not you that's talking necessarily. So who knows, you know, where that argument goes, and the judges that are kind of on the left don't like the idea that preparing a cake, you know, decorating it is the same as speaking. But the judges, there's judges on the other side of the case, you know, they basically have the idea, you know, the government doesn't have any business forcing you to express or write out in icing whatever ideas that they find abhorrent to them for whatever reason it is. And it wouldn't have to be, you know, homosexuals and a baker, a Christian baker. It could have been, you know, a Jewish baker and a Nazi cake, or you could come up with whatever, you know, whatever examples you want. But, you know, do you have to do that? And so the justices, you know, they're caught in a bind, I think, in that you've got certain messages that a few people might find really bad, And that might be this one. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people, a lot of Christians who would say, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't bake that cake. But it's not certainly a vast majority of all people would say, oh, you're right, and you shouldn't have to do it. It may be a minority of people that would feel strongly enough that they'd say, no, I'm not doing that for you. But if they go against them on that, then what happens when it's a message that 95% of the people find abhorrent, like the Jew having to bake the cake for the Nazi? And so the judges are kind of, I think they're kind of stuck between those things, that even if they might want to, you know, I don't know, bash this guy, because, you know, these days the Christian guy may be a little bit out of favor, not so much in favor as the homosexual couple, who just, it's only been a couple years or so since they, you know, won the right to get married, so they're kind of more of a favored
privilege.
Yeah, favored, you know, position right now. I don't know how to put it, and I don't mean to be mean about it or anything. I'm just saying it's kind of going against that grain if you got to go back and hold for the Christian guy who doesn't approve of gay marriage. And so, you know, you have that. Justice Kennedy, I think, in the oral argument pointed out that, you know, I mean, tolerance is a virtue, but it looked to him like Colorado was not being very tolerant or respectful, you know, of the baker's beliefs. So that one, I don't know. I kind of think that maybe this one, you know, could very well go in with this guy, because it seems so, boy, I hate to say this, but, you know, it's kind of anti-American, you know, to make anyone, you know, say things they don't want to do. Although it's kind of weird, because it's probably worse to make people do things they don't want to do. I mean, I guess I realize the incongruity of not forcing Randy England to say a few words of some kind, but being able to stick a gun in his hand and force him to go shoot somebody that he never met because of a bunch of old jackasses in Washington, D.C. said so. But
that's very
that's
American.
Where we are. Yeah, that's yeah. Both of those are very American.
I had this conversation earlier today with somebody, and they started trotting out the whole amendment thing and the Title II of the Civil Rights Act, and started quoting all these laws and all this legalese and everything else. And one of the things that was brought up was the notion that if you have a business that's open to the public, then people, different groups in the public cannot be discriminated against. Now, me,
yeah, and that's their argument.
Yeah, so basically, he was using it's the law, and we all know that the law is nothing more than the opinions and declarations of idiot politicians scribbled down on paper that's not actually magic. And in this particular case, the law is the major problem here, because the law is contradictory. It talks about protecting rights, but it actually has to violate rights of one to protect the other. And these rights that is defending are positive rights rather than negative rights. And positive rights being, you have a right to this, you have a right to that, where negative rights are, you have a right to be left alone. With the positive rights, people say, I have a right to free health care, or I have a right to free walls, or I have a right to free cotton, in the case of the slave master. And with these things here, somebody else is being forced to produce or provide the free health care, the wall, the cotton, if not
the
through their actual, if not, or the cake, if not through their actual labor, but through cost. Now, in this particular case, this person is being forced to perform labor that goes against his religious beliefs. Now, I'm not religious at all. I'm a non-believer, or basically I don't really care.
But you're still a good guy.
In a direction. Of course, because I'm a non-believer and don't really care and don't really want to meddle with other people's lives. But the thing is,
why?
Yeah, but the thing is, I can support this guy's right, this baker's right to say, you know what, I really don't want to participate in that. If you want to buy something off the shelf, fine, buy it off the shelf. But if you want me to specifically make a cake that says that, no. And I support his right. I don't agree with his reasons for it, but I support his right to say no. Just like I support the Muslims' right not to make a cake with a cartoon of Muhammad, or the Jews' right not to make a cake with a swastika on it.
Now, what if the baker? What if the baker had said, I won't bake you this cake because you're a woman.
I support that, too. I support discrimination in all forms, because discrimination is not actually a naughty word. The meaning of discrimination is to choose. They're choosing something over another. They're picking one over another. When it comes to your relationships, did you pick a woman of the same race as you, or did you go outside of your race?
Well, no, I not only picked a white person, but...
So you discriminated against every other race?
I also discriminated against men and picked a woman.
Oh, my gosh. I imagine you probably discriminated against people with active heroin habits, too?
She met a number of my criteria that excluded many, many other women, yes.
Oh, my God. So you discriminated in your life?
It was horrible. It was terrible.
Oh, my God. See, the thing
but,
is...
But see, you didn't have to... I was the one who's going to have to live with her, right?
Right.
You know, you're very discriminating then.
Yeah. Well, it used to be a compliment to be called a person of discriminating taste.
That's right.
But here's the thing. If somebody wants to discriminate against women, blacks, Jews, Mexicans, whatever, all right, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Not because I agree with it, but because I think they'll get sorted out down the line. If you don't want to serve women, okay, congratulations. You just lost 52% of the market share. You just eliminated that on your own.
And you you're a fool, and you may be a very odious person. But you and I, we both draw the line when the government steps in, right?
Yeah, yeah. And quite frankly, if somebody says no, we're not going to serve women there. We're going to exclude women from services. There's a lot of people, possibly men, that might say, I'm not going to shop there. I'm not going to do my business. Let them suffer the economic death penalty for stupidity.
Right on. We'll be back.
I just solved problems for no payments of 1984.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Fiends.
We're back. Back from
Is there an echo here? Is there an echo in here?
I think there is, Lou. Take it away.
So my final comment on Cake Gate here is, if how could I put it? Let me just instead of interpretive dance, which never works on the radio, I'm going to explain a meme. I'm going to use visual humor to push forward an argument here. I saw a meme. It was Wednesday Addams from the Addams Family. You know what a dark little personality that she has.
Yes.
Anyway, it's a picture of her with that deadpan look on her face, and she says, "I baked the cake that the government forced me to make for you. Go ahead. Eat it." And what I really think about when I see that is, if somebody doesn't want to bake a cake for you, but you force them to through pointing government guns at them, what kind of cake do you really expect?
Now, this is a point that people in food service would appreciate 100%. I mean, here I am standing over your meal, your food, and you're giving me a load of baloney. Good idea or bad idea? Check one box.
Yeah. Do you think maybe there's a possibility that somebody might spit in that cake or put something else in there that doesn't belong. Or maybe, make a safe cake, but one that's just physically hideous to look at, lopsided, do just an absolute miserable, piss-poor job because they were forced into it by government guns. I don't know. Do you think maybe that's the case? And quite frankly, this whole notion of forcing somebody to bake the cake, it's, how can I put it? I think we're past the point of they want the cake, and have entered into the realm of they want this guy to be forced to bake a cake.
Yeah, does that make sense? I got the feeling in the case that this guy was basically targeted and set up to be reported to the Human Rights Commission or whoever handles this sort of thing, and that this wasn't just a couple of people, you know, just all of a sudden having their hopes and dreams of the year destroyed. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, so basically what I'm seeing here is just busybodies and people that are professional victims.
Well, I mean, they have a point to make. I understand what they want. You know, I just don't agree with it.
Well, I don't believe that they have a right to force somebody to perform labor against their will. And I disagree with their reasons for refusing, but I support their right to refuse.
Now, if the court does, shall we say, the right thing, and says that this baker,
if the court does the right thing and says the government
the right
is
thing
illegitimate,
and, says baker does not,
and all these laws should be burned?
It's not going to happen. But they might say that the baker doesn't have to bake the cake. Now, I was saying earlier, you could hold for him. The opinion of the court could be for him under the freedom of religion, which would be one thing, but the court may more likely hold in his favor on freedom of expression, freedom of speech. And if they do that no one can say anything they don't
want. So you mean both the Chapter 5, Article 67 and 68 rights?
I have no idea what those numbers are.
That's from the North Korean Constitution.
Okay.
From their Bill of Rights.
If depending on how the court comes down, it could create a can of worms later on if somebody decides to discriminate against some other category, such as women or blacks, an interracial couple, if you want to, you know, mix.
Mixed marriage metaphors?
Yeah, just all these in one place or something, you know. But, I mean, there are some people that, you know, would say they didn't want to be involved in that. And I'm thinking the court maybe wants to not box itself into a corner where it would have to say, oh, you can tell somebody you won't bake them a cake because they're black. I mean, you and I think anyone anywhere can make a cake for anybody they want or not bake it. But I cannot imagine the Supreme Court letting that happen. Never.
I don't know.
They're not going to get rid of discrimination laws. It's not going to happen.
I'm sure they can find a way to mess it up. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agrist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime, or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agrist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
We'll be right back.
Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Randy England, not Esquire, Emeritus. Counselor
Good
Emeritus.
Morning.
Yes. So last week, I mentioned how economists, and I'm doing air quotes as I say that, Joseph Stiglitz, I guess he's technically an economist. He received a Nobel Participation Trophy in economics at some point, and I'm not really sure why, but he's part of the stodgy old guard. And when I hear these old farts like him or Alan Greenspan or maybe some of these banking executives talking about Bitcoin, I guess a comparison of these old farts talking about Bitcoin sounds like asking a postal worker in 1980 to describe email, because they just absolutely have no clue and no idea what they're talking about, and just absolutely clueless as to how everything works. And it appears that it's not just these old economists and these old banksters, but politicians too, and not just American politicians. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's American politicians that are getting it wrong at the speed of light. But there's another politician that's getting it wrong, and the governments of different countries have mentioned getting into the cryptocurrencies after seeing the popularity of Bitcoin and some of the other altcoins out there, and they're really taking off. And Maduro, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, has decided that his next 3-year plan, his next series of 3-year plans, will include cryptocurrency to pull Venezuela out of the problems caused by socialism. So currently their currency that they use now is called the Bolivar, and if the Petro comes into existence...
Hey, it looks like we may have lost Lou, and the Petro, it seems, that Nicolas Maduro is instituting, he declared that the 21st century has arrived and is launching the Petro, which is supposedly to be backed by the oil reserves of Venezuela. Honestly, perhaps Lou knew. I have the slightest idea how you would back up your petro currency your petro with the oil in the country. Does that mean if you had a petro coin, you would be able to trade it in for a gallon of oil or gasoline or something? I don't know, but he said that Venezuela will create a cryptocurrency backed by oil, gas, gold, and diamond reserves. And he said this in his regular Sunday broadcast. Just every time I read one of these things, I can't believe it. During a 5-hour showcase of Christmas songs and dancing. So I guess this guy just interrupts, you know, variety shows or something. And I don't know if that's peculiar to Venezuela or if that's a Latin America thing. I have no idea about that at all. But it's hard to imagine how this will work in Bitcoin, and I'm not an expert on it, but I believe that there are limits. You can only have so many coins. They finally get mined up to so many millions, and then there aren't any more. And you have a currency like that, it's almost, I don't know how you can inflate it. Bitcoin has been deflating, you know, so crazily. The price of it, the value of the Bitcoin is going through the roof. I don't know what it is right now, if it's 13,000 or something, but I would think that if Venezuela had a crypto coin, they would need to be able to create more of them. They've been running, I don't know how high their inflation level is running right now, but if it's 50%, to keep that up, they would have to make 50% more of Bitcoin, not Bitcoins, Petros, every year. So that's that story, and I will leave it to Lou. I hope that he will join us again very soon, and he may have more to say on the subject. But Lou sent me some other articles, for fascinating. There's one that I just loved from, it's from Minnesota. And the title of the article is "Internet Rallies Behind St. Paul Cat banned from library after repeated attempts to enter. And there's this cat, cute tabby cat. Looks like wouldn't harm a fly. I'm sure he would harm a fly, but you know what I mean. It says another Minnesotan male is in trouble, but it's not for what you think. So reference to Al Franken there. Max, an orange tabby cat in St. Paul, has caused an internet uproar because of his propensity for books. Apparently, he's been sneaking into the library at McAllister College, and now he's facing the repercussions. The library banned him with a wanted-like poster on the door. And there's a poster with a cat's face. Please do not let in the cat. His name is Max. Max is nice. His owner does not want Max in the library. We do not want Max in the library. Max wants to be in the library. Please do not let Max in the library. Max just waits outside the door to run in because he really, really likes it in the library. They have a video, a shot here of Max, who was caught on the security cameras running through the stacks, and it says looking as guilty as ever. And then some people that have ran into Max, you know, had tweeted, well, mostly he just blocks the door to the library and tries to run in as soon as you open the door. And the internet can't get enough of it. There's apparently a cartoon started by a McAllister art student about Max the cat trying to get into the library. Someone has graciously created a library card for Max. That is, this is at the Star Tribune. Is that a Minneapolis paper? But I don't know if it is or not. But Max, hey Lou, you're back. that's new, Nathan. Nathan, are we on the air? All right then. Well, anyway, Max is really a big hit. There's a lot of cartoons going up with Max the cat, and someone pointed out Max apparently can read a number of languages. He was previously caught in the tutoring office of the Department of Spanish and Portuguese, and they said they taught Max how to say gato. So some people actually, you know, have interacted with Max while he was there. His human grounded him for his wayward behavior, but he's still just gone through the roof. The cat, when he's not in the library, when he can't get in, I guess when he gets tired of waiting at the door to get in, he hangs around. He goes to other places, you know, around the school. People know Max around campus, and now they know him even better. This one fellow who spoke to the Star Tribune, Max has been a campus-wide topic of conversations for a while. His interest in academia knows no bounds. He's been spotted everywhere from dorms to science buildings, trying to get a little pet and away inside. He does prey on people's sympathies just to get inside, but other than a few complaints about cat allergies, he seems to be welcome there. So that was kind of a cool article, and you know, we complain a lot here on the Freedom Fiends and that, but this cat, gotta love this guy, really. Now, and Lou, I know he's going to be back anytime soon, but there's another thing that Lou sent me. He sent me a lot of great articles, and I'm glad he did, because he's not here to discuss these with me, but another article from WIVB.com, and holy cow, this is Buffalo, New York. Community leaders want to keep toy guns out of children's hands. And I've heard that before, but I've never seen this accomplished through a toy gun exchange. And so they are sponsoring, I don't think it's the police department, at least it doesn't seem to be. That's who usually does the gun exchange. But the toy gun exchange has a strong message for parents this Christmas. They want to keep toy guns out of the children's hands. And if the kid already has a gun, or if you already bought a gun, they're going to, they don't want you to give that to the child. But it's encouraging parents to give up the toy guns and exchange it for a different toy as part of the annual toy gun exchange at the community center. And it's an effort to help stop gun violence by teaching children at an early age that guns are nothing to play with. I can see where you'd get the wrong message, because toy guns are to play with. And I can remember when I was a child, I pointed them at people and went around with my finger on the trigger, which is a huge no-no, you know, once you get a real gun. But I'm proof that you can actually get over that and not kill people like I killed them by the hundreds when I was a child. I understand how a mother may feel wanting to get something her child was like, but what we don't want to do is make a child feel comfortable with a toy gun. And I don't know, there's something weird about that, but I can't quite put my finger on it. But anyway, that's in Buffalo, New York. There's a toy gun exchange, so parents that are there have this opportunity to go with that. In Africa, I don't know if everyone remembers, this was real popular, I imagine, 5 or more years ago. I think going all the way back to 2011, where was this program called One Laptop Per Child. And it was some foundation, I think it was a private thing, which is good. And the One Laptop Per Child, they originally created this little plastic laptop computer. I mean, it, you know, with the keyboard down the bottom and the screen that flipped up. And I think they made them so you could use them all in a little village that was a million miles from anywhere, and they networked with one another. And I don't know how that went. And maybe, you know, I don't know how much good it did or whatever. But this new thing is they took a bunch of tablets. And the founder of the One Laptop Per Child was interviewed about this new program they had. Yeah, oh, One Laptop Per Child, I just found it. 2005 is when they started. And there are 2.5 million of those original One Laptop Per Child out there in 40 countries. And this is the next step that we're coming back into. And we'll come back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha, biptunia.com.
Well, the Freedom Fiends are back. And I'm hoping that Lou is back with me. I think that he is. But we were talking about One Laptop Per Child. And back in 2005, this program with this foundation, I think it's a private foundation, but I'm not sure, was to give out a bunch of these little laptops that were cheap and durable. And I don't know how well that worked, but they came up with a new idea two villages, I think in Ethiopia. They came up with this idea to, they wanted to know how kids could learn without being taught. You know, what if you didn't have a school? What if you didn't have teachers? What if there was a way that kids could learn and just learn on their own? Because we're talking about a village that neither the kids nor their parents know how to read. And so they wanted to answer that, and they delivered two fully loaded tablets, you know, tablet computers, like we all know, like a smartphone, to two villages in Ethiopia. Fully loaded. No, there was more of them. There was one for each child in the village. And they brought them with no instructions, no instructional material. I think I understand that they came in just in a box. I mean, the kids had to open up the box. It came with a solar panel because there was no electricity in the villages. And apparently they got with the adults and showed the adults how to charge the machines. Didn't show them anything else. And the machines contained a lot of apps, games, books, cartoons, movies, paint programs, things like that. And they monitored the tablet. Well, they said they monitored it remotely, which apparently involved swapping out SIM cards every week so that they could take those back to their computer lab and see what was being done on the machines. And they found out that with as soon as the tablets got there, within minutes of them arriving, the tablets got unboxed and were turned on by the kids themselves. Nobody told them how to do it. And I don't know what kind these were. I doubt if they were iPads. Who knows?
They were Motorola Zoom.
Some kind of Motorola Zoom. There we go. Lou, I'm glad to hear you.
Yeah. This is a wonderful story. And I'm going to interrupt you here. I wasn't on speakerphone. But anyway.
Oh, that's much better. Yes.
All right. So the reason I brought this story up was because the usual conversation was happening earlier today or yesterday, and the question was, without government schools, without public education, how would the poor learn to read and write? So who would educate the poor? And I recounted over through history how in the 1800s, 1700s, a town would get together and they would hire a teacher, and it wasn't done out of taxation. It was done out of tuition and then also private donations and things like that.
Say, Lou, it down just a little bit. You're a little loud there.
Okay.
There you go.
Anyway.
That's better. Good.
So anyway, I was discussing that, and then also how most public libraries were actually private, but were made available to the public so the townspeople could go in there. And when we look at what exists today with Khan Academy, YouTube, all these different homeschools that are either no cost or low cost, the question isn't how will the poor be educated, but the question should be is how will the poor actually escape an education in this modern day? Which led me to this article here. And in this particular case, these villages in Ethiopia, nobody in these villages had seen the written word before, because there was no packaging on products or things like that. We're talking about third world countries with third world villages, no electricity. So that's why they had solar charging things there.
And now the results are not in yet, right?
No, preliminary. Not, but preliminarily, within a couple minutes, they had the tablets operated in the organization. Those people expected that they would only play with the boxes, you know, use them as building blocks. But eventually, within 5 months, they had hacked the laptops or the tablets and activated the cameras and all these different apps that had been deactivated by somebody in the technical group.
Well, I think we're about out of time here.
So these kids learn to read and write and hack without any formal training.
Well, we'll see how it goes.